And welcome, 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 dear listeners, wherever you find yourself. Welcome to your Wednesday edition of the On the Radar. And yes, you and I company all the way from 1 p.m. up and until 2:30. Now, of course, there's been a lot of developments happening in and around the country, specifically from those coming through from late yesterday. And ultimately, just giving you one of particular details that came through in terms of the particular national sort of like shocker that emanated through from the arrest announcement that came through of the former executives of NAMCOR, that's the Namibia Petroleum Corporation, which also cited certain particular aspects in terms of the discussion that you will hear at the start of our program today. However, before we actually commence into that, just to let you know that the Villager ePaper platform is out. The Wednesday edition is out and about and technically just waiting for you to read it. That's obviously the 9 July edition. Just so that you know, some of the particular pertinent discussions that we've got in there is the aspect of the cyber threats that Namibia has encountered in 3 months, in a period of 3 months. A second particular scenario is obviously the BRICS members discussion that recently took place in the BRICS members summit that was hosted in Brazil. That happened on Sunday to Monday. Obviously, one of the particular founding members of BRICS is currently in Namibia. That's obviously the visiting Prime Minister of India, that being Narendra Modi, who will or is slated later today to actually speak in the National Assembly. It actually, as a fun fact, dear listeners, regarding that particular engagement, he was supposed to just have a sitting or to sit in our National Assembly affairs, specifically in terms of the engagements. However, he is going to address, which changed to an address taking place later today. And that is obviously as much of the particular engagement sees that this is the third time that a Prime Minister of India has actually visited Namibia. That particular fact is also something that is found on the Indian Prime Minister's own particular website in India, citing that there have been three previous visits by, the Prime Minister is not technically the head of state, but the representative head of state of India that has made visits to Namibia. And just citing in that particular scenario, dear listeners, you can always listen to us wherever you find yourself, from a radio frequency all the way to the website. Most pertinently, there's also the Eagle FM application that you can download for free on either the Apple or Google platforms for you to listen in and engage with us in terms of your favorite content and conversation scenarios taking place. Starting off, as we always do with our discussions, we always give you an insight into what you can expect during the course of your engagement here with us at On the Radar. Taking a look specifically at the developments coming through in terms of the aspect of the ACC's arrest of the former managing director of the Namibia Petroleum Corporation. We have a conversation with Professor Kutsia from the Economic Policy Research Association of Namibia in terms of whether or not this particular discussion looks like a governance issue. We will have that particular conversation coming up just after the particular introduction. We take a look at a recently launched innovation coming through in terms of the UNESCO research chair launch, the fifth of it, taking place in Namibia at the Namibia University of Science and Technology, which occurred earlier this morning. And we touched down on an engagement that took place yesterday in the National Assembly, where the Deputy Speaker to the National Assembly, that being Deputy Speaker Katamelo, cited and motivated the particular report of last year's 2024 elections in the National Assembly platform. On that note, dear listeners, we're quickly taking a short break and we'll come back right after this.
Lipura nengeno wapombwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndadoi nawa Nuneudo, o tukwetira o special, ngeta shake ngejefa omarudi tayo loka, opone ujendi fenawa, nokumona oijamwiri nawa, ninge pata fanona, monika ko Eagle FM, onore tatuimwe bali heavy, nola natu, heavy bali no heavy, ileko berewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu hatatu, omafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Coming back from the quick break right there and stepping into our first item this afternoon, dear listeners, getting into the discussion as well as also some of the unclear scenarios that have come about or emanated from the quick fire announcements of yesterday with regards to the announcements coming through across Namibia's media landscape in terms of the arrests that were conducted by the AC, by the Anti-Corruption Commission, regarding former executives of the Namibia Petroleum Corporation, that being NAMCOR. We take a particular look in terms of the engagement, or we take this particular subject matter to an analyst in terms of understanding, does this not look like a governance issue that persists in Namibia? Speaking to Professor Johan Kutsia from the Economic Policy Research Association of Namibia, we try to understand this particular subject matter in this analysis. Stay tuned.
Professor Kutsia, thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners here at Eagle FM. And once again, just citing, you know, the last time we did a discussion was obviously based in an elections theme and an elections scenario. But once again, thank you for taking the time.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Prof, if we take a look specifically at some of the particular developments that obviously have kicked off in Namibia regarding the NAMCOR arrests. Now, I'm not going to ask you anything that might still be, what do they call that particular term? You know, the charges still have to be unveiled by ACC. The particular, you know, judicial affiliated exercises like formally charging those that have been reportedly been accused and the likes. That process still has to take place on its own. But the question that I want us to focus on today is specifically that much of the media reports indicate that this has to, that these are mostly former executives of this SOE. And it seems almost like a puzzling scenario to Namibians. Now, when I lay that foundation for us, the first particular question that pops up is one about a governance issue. And just for our listeners, Prof, I just want you to sort of like explain to us, what does governance look like for a public entity, and what does it potentially look like for a private entity?
Yeah. Thank you very much for the question. You know, in terms of the Companies Act, doesn't matter if you're private or state of the enterprise or a public-private partnership or enterprise. The fiduciary duties remain the same. It's based on, that's for the board members and it's for the directors on that specific board. And that means, everybody on the board must operate in good faith. And it all must, you know, based on as if you're taking care of a disabled person. So it's a caring attitude, as if the person, the company, is a disabled person, and it's also based on the foundation of intellectual honesty. That means you must have an awareness and a consciousness that you have taken the right decision in terms of not only the knowledge that they have, but tapping into somebody else's knowledge or other knowledge which you don't know and necessarily have access to, but have gone to the external length to get that knowledge and insight before you make a decision. That means you must do your homework, especially very good. And this is not the case if we look at the NAMCOR board, the decisions they have made at Namdia, at the fish core, that contribute to fish rot, and Meatco and Air Namibia, the fiduciary duties remains exactly the same, public or private company. In a public company, it's just the accountability is even bigger because it's now towards the public. You must serve the public. while in a private company, in a limited corporation, it's only to the shareholders, people that have shares in the company. But in terms of public enterprises, the stakeholders are everybody. It's the public, the taxpayers that also fund these public companies. So it is all people in Namibia that pay taxes and people that not pay taxes, but even more people that pay taxes, to whom you should be accountable and transparent and responsible and prove that you are accountable and transparent and based and act in their best interest and not a small group of shareholders like in a private company. And that's the main difference. But it's a slight nuance difference, but you should even be more careful as a board member. Now, the status of governance in Namibia is, I think it's at an all-time low at the moment. If you look at Transparency International, that rate, governance and corruption in Namibia, since 1998, and I've compiled all the rankings. I'm not referring to the score out of 10 now. I refer to the score out of 10 because the rankings differ as more countries are added. But we are at 4.9 out of 10. So if you are a student, for example, we would have failed miserably. Even if we are number 5 or 6 in Africa at the moment, it doesn't matter. We have, in the past, we have number 2 and number 3, and we are also going down in terms of the rankings. Seychelles, Mauritius, Botswana, these countries are higher up in Africa. So the governance issue in Namibia is, if you look at the ACC and the watchdogs from that point of view, what happened with the Fischerod case? In 2000 and what is it? It was 12. Yeah. They investigated Fishcore, found nothing wrong. Then there was a whistleblower. And then suddenly the pressure was on the ACC. 2 petitions on the ACC, for example. And then suddenly they come forward and make some arrests and some people disappear to South Africa. And now it's the same. You know, they've looked at NAMCO previously, 2 years ago, cleared Mr. the CEO. And now suddenly due to public pressure, what additional information have now surfaced that caused now 5 arrests? You know, it means that the ACC only do something when there's political pressure on them, and it's so obvious to the public that they can't deny it anymore. So that means that watchdog is basically non-existent. That's what it means. I mean, if you look at the CEO of ACC, it's the same person for how many years? 15 years now already. If we look at the ombudsman, previously they also focused on corruption, but since the ACC came into effect, not anymore. Since the departure of Mr. Walters, Advocate Walters, the ombudsman, you don't really see them any prominence of them anymore. So we have so many examples of state-owned enterprises that are deteriorating, and the examples that I've mentioned, and Namibian Institute of Pathology and NASFAF, the Students Association. And now that it is the culture. It's not just corruption anymore. It has shifted to a higher degree of systemic corruption. And it's become so, you know, the one scandal have replaced the other one. Previously in the beginning, if you can remember, you know, it was the SEC in 2003, 2004, 2005, the NHE, and every few years, 4 or 5 years, something like that. But now it's every year, and it's, you know, it's Namdia, and the same year it's now MICO, and it's also NAMCOR. I mean, it is 3 and 6 months. The scale, the frequency is picking up, and the public have become so used to that sort of corruption that it's just replaced with another newspaper. And that's the problem in Namibia, that although people are more aware of what's going on in the media and on social media, and every, you know, people try to play their role, it's the culture have changed since independence. And the speed of corruption have picked up, there are so many good things in Namibia happening, and we should not only focus on the corruption and the pathetic governance that we have, but the question is when will it be enough for politicians to start acting on it? And the answer to that is very simple. If you look at other countries that have gone through that period, like Singapore, United States, England, some time ago, not recently. And the answer to that is that politicians will only do something against corruption when they start losing votes as a result of corruption. Now, the question is, have we reached that point? I think slowly but surely. But it is not an exact point in future that we can pinpoint when exactly. And the question is, will another party that have no experience of good governance, because you remember when we became independent, not the liberation struggles, or the apartheid, or colonialism, or neo-colonialism, have prepared any Namibian for good governance.
Or even for self-governance.
None of that. No, we didn't have any experience of that, and suddenly this honeymoon period started, and we were the darling of the world, but that vacuum still remains, and that vacuum was filled by the, you know, politicians abusing that. And now we see the effects of that, of people that even in business, and I'm from the Economic Policy Research Association on their board, one of the additional founding members. And we approach big businesses that support us, but they say, don't tell anybody we support you. So, you know, this is the culture in Namibia. Even big businesses are not prepared to stand up because they are afraid they will lose more support and more tenders from government, especially white-owned businesses. And that is a problem. And we don't see a lot of, prominent black-owned businesses that come forward and say, no, this is enough. We have to do something. And these are the critical people, the critical, you know, the France in Dongwas, the Pupkowitz, the Ottawa, and those are the big companies, MNZs, that must come forward and make a difference, and the banks as well, but it's not happening. So the private sector is as responsible for condoning the culture of corruption that we have in Namibia as the public sector and the politicians behind it. Because you have to remember, a lot of money is given to politicians for political parties, and they control the politicians, just like in America to a less extent, also in Namibia. And they control and said, but you know, we want tenders. And the way that we receive that tenders are through corruption. It is through inconsistency, application of black economic empowerment, lowering of standards, deviations, creating distrust, and they put pressure on politicians, but politicians are not strong enough in this country to say no, this is enough, because they don't want to lose political support. And I think the ruling party is at that vulnerable point as well, in that situation, that they can't say no to corruption. Otherwise, they will lose more votes, and then they will lose the next election.
Prof, I also wanted to sort of like zone in one particular singular point that you also made at the start of our discussion. Obviously, there has been talk about the Whistleblower Act itself. And
yes.
Much of the developments that we've seen in the high-profile corruption cases of Namibia, it was reliant firstly on the media playing a role, but that the media was sort of like the last solution, the last case, the last chance saloon for a whistleblower from most of these particular SOEs to blow, let me not use that term, but rather to expose or shine a light on activities that many people outside of Namibia in the broader community and the broader public would never have seen. Even if they know some of the executives personally, they would never have known that this is the kind of operation that
absolutely
that the management of said particular SOE had been conducting.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's that kind of scenario in Namibia?
Well, you have mainstream media in Namibia, and I don't want to mention them, but these are normally the media that's not independent and they operate in a sort of a network. Mm. Then you've got more independent media, and I appreciate them. If it wasn't for them, I think the public would not have known. The problem in Namibia is not just the mainstream media, but also the fact that the media find it more and more difficult for, in terms of funding, to do investigative journalism. And that is a problem. It's a big problem, but thank God for the media. I mean, that is, as you said, this is the last beacon. It's one of the pillars of good governance, is the media. And the watchdogs, like, for example, the ones that I've mentioned, and also the whistleblower commissioner. If we compare that to the best in the world, for example, you have a system in America, and I'm only referring to the system now, not to their level of corruption. And that is that if you come forward as a whistleblower, it is extremely dangerous. You are blackmailed, you are isolated, you are threatened with death, you lose your job, your friends don't like, you don't want to be associated with you anymore, and that's a big danger. So if you want to encourage people to blow with the whistle, you must create incentives that's lucrative financially for them, because it's not a moral thing anymore. If you lose your job and your family, and that's not the point. That's not the situation in our Whistleblower Protection Act, where the minister responsible for the whistleblower office can decide unilaterally on his own to make a recommendation to cabinet if you should receive and what amount you should receive. But in terms of the American legislation, it is stipulated as such: if you bring a case forward, And on your own with funding, take it to court, you can end, I think, to 25% to 30% of the recovery of the amount recovered as a result of the whistleblowing. And if the Justice Department in America does it on its 15%, you can still own 15%. Now, if you take that amount of money just from 1 million, I mean, that's not a substantial amount of money. Why don't we have advised, the policymakers in government about that, to change it to that effect. But they didn't want to, and I suspect it's because they're not serious. But there are best practices that can be used. Yes,
I want to ask Prof, is it still in draft phase, the Whistleblower Act?
The Whistleblower Act has been passed in 2017 already. And they are busy setting up the office and writing the regulations.
Which has taken another 10 years to complete.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't even know if the office is in operation yet, because you're never a year of them. But the act has been passed already in 2017.
So this is also similar to like the Information Act, where there's supposed to be an information commissioner.
Yes.
We also don't have a Data Protection Act yet, which hasn't been finalized.
Yes.
However, we went and converted the old Electronic Devices Act, the one that was used to throw out the legal challenges in 2008 and 2012, against the elections, court challenges that took place then, because the EVMs were something new and Namibia's legislation said, listen, let's throw out any evidence that comes that is generated by electronic devices.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there was never a paper trail as recommended with the previous election before this one of last year. It was never implemented. And the question is, why was it never implemented? Now we have made another big mistakes on the previous election. And as you said, still, where are the changes? It means we're going to repeat the same things next year, and it will probably even become worse, with the print. You remember the printing of the election, the ballot papers and all that controversy behind it. So it means that politicians are not serious. addressing these issues and on a regular basis and keeping the momentum in doing so. And you know, the other problem is that people in Namibia, you know, are struggling to survive at the moment. You know, our GDP have decreased. It's now, I think, according to the World Bank, 4,240 something like GDP, GDP per capita.
Yeah.
While in 2024, so it deteriorated about 600 US dollars per year compared to 2023. It means people are on survival mode. If you're on survival mode, you don't have time, you know, to spend a lot of time on corruption and what's happening in the country and the old people accountable and attend the meetings and petition against things. No, you're on survival mode. That's the other problem. It's in the interest of politicians to keep Namibians poor and in survival mode, because then they don't have the time like me to spend more time on trying to hold politicians and these board members of state-owned enterprises are accountable. And the, you know, they are from the one board to the other board. I mean, there are people that have sat on the Bank of Namibia board. And then they are the chairperson of Namdia. Now, for example, they are at Ministry of Mines and Energy. And from the one to the other. And look at the SME bank issue and the role that the Financial Intelligence Center have played, the role that the Bank of Namibia have played. For years, they've seen the transactions. Nothing happened. Why does nothing happen to people sitting on these boards? And it just becomes that culture of tolerance. Nothing will happen. Therefore, like the CEO of, previous CEO of NAMCOR, I mean, if you make a 100 million deal without board approval, and you take some of, let's say 20 million for your own pocket, I mean, that's very conservative. Why would you care about another job if you know nothing will happen and maybe it will go to jail and after 5 years it will come out? I mean, the Fisher Road trial is just not as it even started yet.
Yeah, we're still stuck. For example, we're still stuck in the pre-trial phase.
Exactly. So it will take years, and that money has been somewhere laundered in terms of cryptocurrency or whatever the case may be, and nobody will trace it. The Fisher Road money. So you come out and you still have your lifestyle, and nobody cares. It is that culture of you take the risk. It's worthwhile taking the risk, and we should close down and increase the risk and the exposure. And we, our legislation are also not good enough in terms. If you look at the anti-corruption legislation, and also people fined for crimes in Namibia like money laundering and for corruption and fraud. And that is that there's a fixed amount. Now, that should not be the case because the fixed amount is never applied. It, you know, the amount that you are in, the amount that you benefit from corruption should be directly linked to the risk. And the risk of the fine should be much more than what you have benefited. And that will deter people from taking the risk of corruption. So it's a question of incentives for whistleblowing that should be increased to incentivize people, protecting people, because if you receive a lot of money, you can buy your own protection. but the risk of exposure and the scandal of that is still working. But if you have such an amount of a few million that you benefited from it, and we have seen it with so many CEOs in Namibia of state-owned enterprise, why would you care if you go to another country after being jailed or even before you've been jailed? That doesn't have an agreement with Namibia
to extradite you.
I mean, that's the easiest thing in the world. You go to Dubai or you go to another country and you just disappear and you have a fabulous lifestyle. And that's why people take the risk. It's simple. It's basic maths about, you know, plus minus benefits and risks. That's how I see it. It's not a moral thing anymore. It's a financial thing.
Exactly. Professor, I'd like to have this conversation, you know, for hours, but I know that I have to release you. Just your particular final thoughts, if we observe this particular landscape, because the ACC is being sketchy in terms of what details. They have told us, the media, that they will let us know regarding some of these particular developments around the arrests that they are in charge of. But when we look at this landscape in Namibia, is there a major particular deficiency in terms of how people approach their fiduciary roles when it comes to representing public interests, and even, like you alluded to in the start of our discussion, even if you're in a private enterprise, having just that particular moral based and acting in good faith compass, which are pretty, you know, they're pretty open-ended traits or characteristics, but do you see that there's a major deficiency in many of the executives that are appointed to these roles?
Well, definitely, it seems like that. You know, if you are sitting on a board, you make collective decisions in terms of the Companies Act, but you are individually liable for those decisions. So if I sit on a board and I agree with a certain decision being made, say, for example, a certain procurement, and I know there's my family member is involved, and I don't disclose it before the time, or I object, and it should be noted in the minutes that I disagree with this decision. It should be in the minutes. Mm. Then I can excuse myself from that. Not necessarily, I can from it, and then I'm not liable.
Yeah.
But the law is not enforced in Namibia. I mean, which state-owned enterprise there's so many have been guilty of corruption, but the individual liability have not been applied.
Mm.
It's not enforced. So we have the base legislation. It's not that we need to create new legislation for board members. It's existing. We have the NAM code, but it should be made compulsory. Mm. It's voluntary in Namibia.
Mm.
It's voluntary. But the Companies Act is, you know, it is law. It should be applied. And the liability clause is not voluntary. It's compulsory, but we don't apply it in Namibia. So when are we going to start to apply it?
Exactly.
Now, coming back there from the engagement there with Professor Kutsia regarding the engagement of taking a look specifically at that, this particular discussion around the ACC arrests do resemble a governance issue that seems to persist in the Namibian corporate landscape. Now, for more, we step into, well, not for more on the same subject, but for more in our discussion today, we quickly step into another one of our reports, citing the discussion regarding the elections, the Electoral Commission of Namibia's report that was cited by the Electoral Commission chair, that being Madam Elsie Nikembwa, back in June. Now, this is as the engagement obviously took place in the National Assembly, where the Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly, that being Deputy Speaker Katamelo, began the motivation regarding the report and some of the functions and findings that were identified. Let's take a listen to this report.
Professor, turning to the National Assembly right now, members of Parliament had the opportunity on Tuesday evening to debate the recently submitted to the Parliament process, the ECN's report of the 2024 presidential elections. Standing up to start off the engagements, the Deputy Speaker, Speaker Katamelo, highlighted some of the particular provisions as well as also the importance of the submission of this report. We take a listen to what the Deputy Speaker outlined.
Notwithstanding that when a job is to be done and it's dirty, it has got an owner. But when it's clean, then the owners are many. So this 31, I will take it. It's my responsibility you have given to me. And with that humility, Honorable Speaker, Honorable Members, and a sense of gratitude, I stand here committed to our democratic principles and present to you regarding the important milestone of our electoral process. The Electoral Commission is required, in terms of Section 116 of the Electoral Act No. 5 of 2014, to submit a report of any election conducted in the country, being the scheduled national, presidential and national assembly, regional or local authorities, elections or any by-election. I'm therefore pleased to inform you that the Commission has, in accordance and fulfillment of Section 116 of the Electoral Act, submitted the performance assessment and post-election report for the 2024 presidential and national assembly elections. The report outlines key electoral activities executed during the pre-election phase, the election phase, and the post-election phase of the 2024 electoral process. In terms of the relevant provisions of the Electoral Act, Section 116, after receiving the performance assessment and the post-election report, the Speaker must cause the National Assembly to consider a report. It is in that spirit and for that particular reason that I'm tabling, on behalf of the Speaker, this report before this August House, in accordance with the aforementioned provisions of the Electoral Act. I further also wish to further appraise the honourable members that the record held in the section of Section 116, subclause 4 of the Electoral Act of 2004, which provides that the Speaker of the National Assembly must distribute such a report to the President, the Chief Justice, the Chairperson of the Electoral Court, the Chairperson of the Magistrate Commission, and the Chairperson of the Law Reform and Development Commission. The Electoral Act further outlines the specific content that must be included in the performance assessment and post-election report. I also want to highlight these key components as essential captured in the report as follows: constitutional and electoral matters, voter and civic education, stakeholder engagement and communication, systems and logistics, election administration, recruitment and training of election officials, observation, election observations and the media, nomination of candidates and campaign process, voting process and the results, technology, security and risk management, summary of electoral court challenges, summary of achievement, recommendations for amendments, financial expenditure, other relevant matters. It is therefore prudent, and on behalf of the Speaker, that I present to you, honourable members, and honourable members of the National Assembly, whose duty it is to ensure that the report is tabled before this August House and that it is carefully considered and deliberated upon. I therefore urge all of you, honourable members, to live up to that expectation. The greatest threat to freedom is the absence of criticism.
Continuing on in the defense of the ECN's report, the Deputy Speaker outlined the importance of various particular contributions that were outlined, as well as also some of the performance parameters. We'll take a listen to this continuing aspect where the Deputy Speaker Katamelo outlined this following motivation.
This is our report. The institution did work on our behalf. Criticize it with the sole intent to know that somebody who does nothing can do nothing wrong,
yes,
but equally can do nothing right.
Yes.
You have to do something, and on the basis of that, you can only move forward.
Yes.
Honorable Speaker, honorable members, following our deliberations, we will ensure that the report is distributed to the following key stakeholders: Your Excellency the President, the Lordship, the Chief Justice, the Chairperson of the Electoral Court, the Chairperson of the Magistrate Commission, and the Chairperson of the Law Reform Development. Additionally, it is imperative that this report, it is also made public for public inspection to ensure transparency and accountability within our electoral system. As I conclude, Honourable Speaker, Honourable Members, I wish to emphasise that the performance assessment and post-election report serve as a critical tool for reflecting on our electoral processes. It helped us to identify areas of success and opportunities for improvement. The Commission has provided material details for every activity, an aspect for review, reference, and kind consideration. Therefore, as we move forward, let us engage in a constructive deliberation on this report with the ultimate goal of strengthening our democracy and enhancing the integrity of our electoral processes. With this said and done, I thank the Electoral Commission for the efforts and the hard work in compiling this comprehensive report, and I look forward to our discussions in the interest of our nation. Thank you,
honorable member. Are there any further discussions?
We're going to take a short break, dear listeners, and we come back right after that, heading into the rest of today's program here on your number one talk radio station. That is on the Eagle FM, and this is the On the Radar.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
We come back from the quick break right there, dear listeners, and stepping into our next item on today's program for the On the Radar. We take a look at a recent scientific as well as also research-based and academic-induced discussion coming through with our next report.
The launch of the UNESCO Chair in Digital Technology Design with Indigenous People happened earlier on Wednesday morning at the Namibia University of Science and Technology with regards to the awarding of the particular research chair to one of the academics at the institute. The latest edition is centered on digital technology design with Indigenous people, and the chair holder is the award-winning researcher Heike Vinches Theophilus. Now, the chair aims to foster technology design practices in collaboration with Indigenous and marginalized communities, with the goal of creating alternative learning ecologies for both communities and students. Now, the previously developed interactive technologies such as augmented and virtual reality, cultural experiences, among others, were on the exhibition at this particular unveiling that took place early on Wednesday. Being one of the speakers at the event, the National Commission on Research, Science and Technology's chief executive, Professor Anicia Peters, cited the importance of these particular research chairs in a country like Namibia and their particular value proposition to the world of research as well as also development in some of these particular aspects. We'll have a listen to what she said.
With the number of UNESCO research chairs, we have 4 out of 5 chair holders, and given the prestige that UNESCO chairs bring, because the UNESCO chair is not working only locally, continentally, regionally, but they work internationally. When you apply, you compete with everybody internationally. You have to check whether that chair actually exists somewhere in the world. And only when it doesn't exist in the world do I even consider sort of evaluating. The research chairs is also, UNESCO research chairs is also not just one person. There's a holder. But with that holder, you need to prove that there is a community of researchers who can support that chair. And with that community of researchers, you need to ensure also that there are PhD students, master students, postdocs who are supporting the research chair's work. So a research chair, in short, is a whole community, right? even though you see one person being the shareholder. And this is why I think it's so significant that the UNESCO chair is essentially the largest NASA's, in this case NASA's footprint to international domains, right? But I will give a little bit of history. You see, I've been a student of Professor Inches. The reason why I am in human computer interaction, because that's my PhD, is because of her. And she told me one day in the corridor, I was making a subject selection, and she said, why don't you go to HCI? Right? And she was, of course, teaching. And then she became my boss. I was working at NAS, and she was first my HOD, and then she became my dean. And then the tables flipped. Then I became the boss. And then I left. But throughout it, because the other fun fact is that because she had inspired me to go into human computer interaction, of course, Henry is also in human computer interaction. And I think that she has also inspired him in turn. Because the beauty of human computer interaction is you do community co-design. Community co-creation. Community is a very big part of what it means to develop human-centered technologies. And now that we're looking at the era of AI, this is where we come in with the human side of AI, ensuring that there are no harms to the human, and ensuring that we maximize the potential of our AI, but doing this through ethical, responsible, and human-centered means. And human-centered doesn't just mean focusing on the human, we also want to focus on the AI itself, right? And if you look at, for instance, that within Africa, there's 5% of the data, internationally, globally, to the large language models, is coming from Africa. Only 5%, right? More or less. Now, this is where your systems become extremely balanced, your AI models, right? Then we are talking about, okay, so now if we are having our own indigenous knowledge, our own values, our own norms and traditions, what happens then to those? Are we all conforming to the Western-centric models because the data is derived from there? Or what are we doing? And this is where the work of a research chair such as Professor Hinches, who takes this work, is coming in to sort of bridge that gap, right? So right now, everything is moving AI, right? We're talking still about tech, but everything is moving AI. Everything is moving. You can talk about, what is it, virtual reality, augmented or extended reality. It's AI infused. There's very little of the domains where it is not touching on it. And this is why I think it's so important and significant that community elders who is basically working with the research chair are also present here today. Because you are the ones who actually infuses the technology that's being designed. Now, that was not what I wanted to say. but I did say that. Another thing is that, let me move on to NCRST. NCRST is created by an Act of Parliament. We implement two acts, the Biosafety Act, so we're the Biosafety and Biotechnology Regulator for media. We're also the regulator of course for science, research, science, technology, innovation. We're tasked with the coordination promotion.
And coming back there from that particular report, dear listeners, that ultimately brings us about 5 to the top of the hour at 2. We'll quickly take a short break and we'll come back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
The eye. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ya inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudini tayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa lokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe mbali hea hii nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile ko derewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
And coming back to your listeners, it's almost about 3 minutes to the top of the hour at two, but welcoming you back to the On The Radar, as well as also welcoming in the studio, my colleague Hende Walengo, in terms of just helping us touch base with some of the particular sports developments that have taken place.
Yes.
Just before we get there, Hende, we've actually it's like going to be two particular reports that you're going to give us.
Okay.
But we're obviously going to start with the first one that has been ongoing ever since last week, the 4th. Just with regards to the updates coming through from the Region 5, I myself have seen that in terms of some of the contact we've got on our social media has been about results as well as also some pretty good performances.
Yeah.
I know I made a promise to our listeners yesterday about, you know, you interacting with us today. Yeah. I had to keep him for today, guys.
Yeah.
When we take a look at some of these developments, Hende, just update us in terms of some of the particular developments that have taken place and which one of the competitive categories have actually, you know, have seen their completion been achieved in the past 5 to 6 days.
Yes, thank you for having me. So, in terms of categories that have finished now, we have swimming that came to an end yesterday.
Mm.
And that's actually been, Namibia's strongest, sport code. We won 10 gold, 9 silver and 11 bronze there.
Mm.
So, quite by far our strongest sports category.
Mm.
We had beach volleyball came to an end also a few days ago. We won a silver there for the boys. The rest of the sports are still ongoing as we speak. That's your table tennis, your beach volleyball, your netball, your football, your judo is still happening. Karate actually also came to a conclusion a few days ago. We have boxing that began yesterday.
Mm.
So I'll be there this afternoon to get some content for you guys there. And, on the football side of things, our girls team under 20 at the under 20 COSAFA Cup that's happening sort of in conjunction with the Region 5 youth games.
Mm.
They made it to the semifinals yesterday. Our boys team unfortunately did not after losing to Malawi 2-0. So on the football side, it's the girls carrying the baton there, which is good to see. Especially considering, after their good performance in the under 17 COSAFA Cup that happened a little over probably a month ago now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Region 5 youth games are in full swing. The athletes, from what I can see from the outside looking in, are enjoying themselves. The people are enjoying being in Namibia. It's good to see, the youth so engaged. And, and maybe not a surprise, but South Africa is dominating in literally all the sports.
Mm.
It's quite remarkable to see how they've are able to be so strong in so many different sporting categories. So they're definitely in the Region 5 in particular are the leaders of the pack.
If we take a look specifically at one of those performances that South Africans have put in, when I peruse through some of the particular some of the typical developments.
Yeah.
It was not just on our socials, but also on the Region 5 socials as well.
Yeah.
There was a monumental football score of like 8-0. I think it was the South African women's team.
Mm-hmm.
They gave it to one of the other, I don't want to say give because it looked more like a beating that took place, but it's not to look down on anyone in terms of the athletic endeavors.
Yeah.
And it literally speaks towards that dominance factor that you've commented, just giving us that update on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we had a look at this, obviously it seems like South Africa is one of the few teams in the Region 5 that have a competitive representation in every bracket, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's, like you said, in every bracket, they're pretty strong. I mean, yesterday they out of the five judo competitions, they won three gold and I believe it was two bronze, something like that.
Mm.
And the coach said, our goal was actually to come in and win five golds.
Mm.
So they won three golds and actually didn't even hit their target.
Yeah.
So that just goes to show how competitive they are and how good they are at their various sports, especially on the football side of things. Like you mentioned, winning by big margins. I mean, even coming into the tournament, there was huge anticipation around the under 20 boys side, in terms of how they're going to play, how exciting they are, because they have kids that play, in your Sundowns academies, your Cape Town Cities academies and so on. So high level, youth sporting environment over in South Africa. But on the football side of things, Zambia have also shown great promise this tournament. I just saw now that the Zambian women beat Eswatini 8-0. That just happened a few moments ago. That news just came
in. So they also tallied in an 8-0 score.
Yes. So yeah, there's lots of talent on the continent in various sports. I'm coming to learn through these Region 5 youth games.
And just before we get to the mountain biking announcement that you just came from earlier a little bit, there's also been Namibia men's rugby's participation in the Rugby Africa Cup.
Yeah, they beat Senegal, to advance to the semifinals where they'll face Algeria. That'll be on,
I think it's on Saturday.
Either Saturday or Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
So, we have to win that competition to qualify for the 2027 Rugby World Cup, which is obviously our goal.
Yeah. Now getting into the particular announcement coming through from FNB a little bit earlier today where you attended, and there was a development coming through with regards to the sports code of mountain biking. What can you tell us about that?
Yes. So, FNB announced their continuation of support of the Ochiha Vera race. This is a staged mountain biking race that takes place in September. So they cycle on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Mm.
Throughout the history of the races, this has been happening since 2005. They've gone on every year since.
Mm.
According to one of the founders, it's actually the only sporting event in Namibia that's been going on for 20 years. I still need to verify that, but intuitively, it does kind of sound correct.
Yeah.
I tried to think of what else has been happening for the past 20 years non-stop.
If it's probably in the similar classification of cycling.
Yeah, the only other close one would be the Desert Dash.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to think, all the other sports, your football Premier League, they took a break for a few years at one point.
Mm.
Rugby had some years where they didn't play.
Mm.
So it could very well be true that this has been happening. It's the only sport that's been happening for 20 years, but like I said, I have to check the record books on that one.
Yeah.
But it is a mountain bike race that takes place, outside of Windhoek. It goes through around the Midgard area, the Leopard Lodge area. That's where their trail is.
Mm.
And, they expect around 200 or so cyclists each time the race is on. And yeah, it was just, an announcement from our partners over at FNB. They said they, for the past 4 years, they've supported this race with over $600,000 Namibian dollars.
Mm.
So, yeah, a good example of corporate supporting Namibian sports.
Hende, are we obviously going to see you probably do participate in that thing? Because our listeners don't know that you're a cyclist, but I know that you're a cyclist.
Yeah. So, it becomes difficult to balance between obviously covering this race for Eagle Media House and participating, but If I can find a good balance, I 100% will,
and obviously will being fit.
And actually, they did say so. This is a call to all the other Eagle FM employees because they said it's a team event only. So
I'll classify right now. I don't have a bicycle.
We can make a plan. We can make a plan.
Yeah.
Or if there's any listeners out there that would like to join me on the bike, more than welcome to reach out.
Yeah.
But we will, at the very least, we will cover the race, and whether I participate or not, there remains to be seen.
Alright, alright. On that note, Hendy, I'd like to thank you for taking the time. Thank you once again for those sports updates. I mean, we try to get them in as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously with the Region 5, it has been a little bit of a hectic week specifically in terms of us feeding for our socials.
Yeah.
So that our listeners can see the developments coming through there.
Most definitely. And stay tuned to our social media pages for sports news, not just Region 5, but
overall
sporting news. Yeah. Yes.
On that note, thank you once again, Hendy.
Thank you.
And dear listeners, this ultimately does lead us into the second half of our program, which leads us into the economic indicators segment, as well as also the international news segment. We're going to be taking a short break and come back right after it.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapomwa eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu. Heari bali no heari ileko derewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Coming back there from the quick break, dear listeners, and the update, the sports update that we provided with you for you right there. We step into a African discussion specifically as discussions in South Africa are taking place regarding the G20 focus. Now, the particular focus of the G20 discussion that is currently taking place in South Africa is a focus on public debt of developing nations that has surged in the past 10 years. We take a listen specifically to this engagement coming through from South Africa.
We'll be focusing on the debt burden of developing nations, which is, of course, a very important topic. Please tell us more.
Absolutely, Sakina. Good morning and good morning to you and the viewers and, of course, Leanne too. So very quickly, last week, I mean, that was our first segment. It features on SA Today, which is between 3 and 6 p.m. This week, of course, as you've said, we are going to be putting that focus on the debt burden of developing nations. Very quickly, last week was really about just how this historic moment is for South Africa, what the symbolism is for South Africa, but also how the G20 itself has transformed, you know, from its beginnings as a finance-focused dialogue to its current role now, you know, as a global economic governance platform, which makes today's topic even that more interesting. I mean, we'll unpack just how the world's public debt, as you've said, has increased over the past 10 years. I mean, I'll give you a hint. It's currently sitting at over $100 trillion, and developing countries owe 31% of that globally, Sakina. So these are big numbers. So we'll unpack it with our research team, our analysts that we'll have on the show itself too. And of course, our reporters have been monitoring G20 working groups meetings across the board. So we'll focus on how all of this gels together and how it will essentially culminate in any declaration, you know, that will be made in November. So we're really here counting down to that leaders summit and to see just how the needle has shifted in terms of the debt burden, especially developing nations like South Africa.
Mm. And any discussions to date by the delegates at these G20 gatherings to this point about these debt burdens, Unathi?
Well, you remember, of course, there are two tracks as it relates to the G20, you know, so we are following all of those tracks. There's that finance track and the Sherpa track. And so under these tracks, you will have all of these focal points, and a number of them do speak to, you know, financial sustainability and all of these things that are related to how, you know, the problems and the prominent issues of debt are. You will recall, of course, that just now the BRICS has concluded its summit. That too was discussed, and that too was a topic of discussion. Also in Seville, in Spain, you know, with the finance conference that took place, where world leaders were really discussing some of these issues. What is of concern, Sakina, I must also mention, is the concern that developing nations are not going to be meeting those very important sustainable development goals of 2030 because of this particular problem. And also of concern is that these countries are really using a number of the critical funding to service that debt instead of issues like health, instead of issues like education. And so it will be very interesting to see then how South Africa has, you know, through these working groups that we've just mentioned now, will then be tackling this particular issue, of course, under its theme too that it has declared for the summit, for the 2025 summit. You remember it's a solidarity and also inequality as well as sustainability. So how all of that will culminate, it will be very interesting. And of course, South Africa is in that troika of Brazil, South Africa, and the United States.
Well, Unathi, certainly.
Stepping over in terms of further particular African news that's currently still happening across the continent, we head over to Kenya once again, where further updates coming through of the nationwide and capital-wide protests in Nairobi, as well as also in broader Kenya, has seen the death toll increase to 31 people. Let's have a listen to this particular report.
31 people died in nationwide anti-government demonstrations on Monday. Police reportedly opened fire at a charging crowd of protesters in the capital, Nairobi, after a tense standoff. Hundreds of demonstrators were arrested. Authorities were deployed across the city ahead of demonstrations to mark the 35th anniversary of the bloody Saba Saba uprising. That's when Kenyans demanded a return to democracy. Well, I'm joined now by Steve Agutu, with the Kenyan governance expert and policy and international affairs analyst in Nairobi, Kenya. It's good to have you with us. The numbers here are shocking. We've got more than 500 people that have been arrested. That's according to the Kenyan Rights Commission, and at least 31 have been killed. Is there a risk, in your opinion, that the government's response might escalate tensions and lead to even more unrest, more deaths?
Right, Brian, thanks for having me on your show. Yes, yesterday's protest, which as you correctly put it, was Saba Saba. Saba Saba is a Swahili word that means the 7th day of July. It's a pro-democracy movement that started in Kenya in 1990 to champion for a multi-party democracy. So yesterday's protests were largely to commemorate the 35th anniversary. And like you've said, it turned out chaotic. We've had 35 people killed. We had a lot of looting that happened yesterday, destruction of property. Mm-hmm. And the government is really being blamed for using very dismissive attitude and tone instead of really listening to the issues that the Kenyan people are raising. They are talking about the high cost of living. They are talking about very high taxation. They are talking about violation of human rights and extrajudicial killings. And they're saying that this has to stop, that we must end corruption that, you know, is locking a lot of young people out of employment. Right now, in the region, Kenya's unemployment rate in the East Africa region stands at about 35%. Majority of our population, about 80%, are young people. And these are smart people. Annually, we graduate about 30,000 out of universities and colleges. And these people don't have jobs. And they're pushing for opportunities, you know, to help them live a meaningful and decent lives.
And Steve, let me ask you too, you know, considering what is driving these protests, do you think that the protests will lead to meaningful political and economic reforms, or do you fear that there's a risk of deeper instability?
Our hope is the government can listen and the president can really listen to the issues that the young people are raising. For example, they are saying that they want opportunities, they want job opportunities. This current government, when they were campaigning, they campaigned on the platform of hope, of job creation. The young people are saying that they're not seeing that. They say they are going to tackle corruption, but we see a lot of that still happening. Young people feel like the economy is just working for the few majority, and they want to be part of the governance process in the country. And so our hope is that the government can really listen and convene what you're calling a national people's dialogue, a constructive dialogue that really is designed to address these issues, come up with a concrete way forward on reforms that need to happen within the police system, and economic reforms, you know, that do not hurt the Kenyan people.
Okay, Steve Agutu, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and helping put this story in some context for us.
Now, so heading into a slightly more international realm, and specifically taking a look at the new threats that Donald Trump is trying to push forward in terms of intimidation towards other nations. And this is as U.S. President Donald Trump has delayed imposing a higher rate on imports to the U.S. until the 1st of August. But he has threatened several countries with new levies. The higher tariffs were due to come into effect this Wednesday today, but the White House says it wants to strike separate deals with impacted countries. Let's take a listen to this report.
The president has delayed imposing a higher rate on imports to America until August 1st, but has threatened several countries with new levies. Trump says he has sent letters to 14 nations, including Japan and South Korea, saying they are facing a 25% tariff. Other trade partners are likely to have even higher numbers, Indonesia 32% and South Africa 30%. Higher tariffs were due to come into effect on Wednesday, but the White House says it wants to strike separate deals with affected countries. And Clifford Coonan is with me from DW Business. Clifford, you have reported from several Asian countries for 20 years. You really know the area and the economies of that area. So this is the second time the president has set a deadline after he postponed tariffs on almost all countries in April for 90 days. What's he trying to achieve with this?
Well, I think it's important that we take a breath here, because basically what you have here is a combination of drama and genuine negotiation. I think Donald Trump brings the drama. The Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who's very experienced in these areas, he's kind of bringing the real negotiations. So it's a tactic, I think, that basically August 1, by pushing it to August 1, that gives them a considerable period of time to strike deals. Slowly a picture is emerging of how these deals could look. And I think it's important not to get too excited by every single move, because I think the drift is very much towards actually signing deals with a lot of these countries.
Now, apparently, Trump is currently focusing mainly on Asian countries. Why is that?
Well, Asian countries are the ones which have the most to lose in this situation, because they're the ones who have the biggest exports to the U.S. They're also the ones that are surrounding China. A lot of the background to this is China. Trump is very keen to close off China's using these countries for transshipping goods to get around tariffs. We saw this with a deal with Vietnam recently, where they're going to have to pay 40% tariffs on goods that are transshipped, i.e. sent through Chinese goods that go through Vietnam to other countries. So Asia is a very important region because China's growing influence there is something that the Trump administration also wants to use tariffs to help control and to slow down the expansion of China.
Okay, so this is pushback against China as well. But what about the European Union? The EU didn't receive any letter.
Yeah, it's looking, I mean, the indications are that we could be seeing a deal coming soon with the EU. That's what a lot of people are saying, obviously very cautiously, because as we've seen in the last few days, these things are going up and down.
Negotiations are ongoing at the moment.
They are. And again, it's this thing where you can sort of see a trend emerging. One of the things apparently in the negotiations with the EU is that they're not getting any guarantees that there won't be another U-turn on tariffs. We are now living in an age of uncertainty when it comes to trade and to global trade and tariffs. So those certainties are gone. Mm. But the indication is that certainly initially that there will be a sort of a deal of around 10% tariffs.
Mm. Now, let's just think for a moment that all these tariffs come into effect. 14 countries are affected, or would be affected by it. What kind of effect would that have on the global economy?
It could be if they come through as they are at the moment, it would have a very serious effect. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think probably you're seeing a model developing of tariffs of about 10%, which I think the global economy can absorb. A lot of that will be passed on to the consumer. You might have some mild inflationary pressures. Prices might get a bit higher including in the US for these goods. But I think overall the global economy would have real difficulty with tariffs of up to 40% on some things, and particularly countries like Indonesia, Malaysia, which are big exporters of chips and these kind of commodities, they could be in real trouble. But I think ultimately it's not going to come out like that. I think it's going to come out a much more reasonable settlement. There's another aspect to this as well, another geopolitical aspect which we're seeing, which is the BRICS countries, mm-hmm. Which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and other countries. They're also facing possible an extra 10% tariff. But again, that's negotiation, and that's very political, and I think that's pretty much aimed at China.
Thank you very much, Clifford Coonan there.
We step into another African constellation just before the foreign exchange scenario. This is building on from the discussion on the Trump tariffs. This is as leaders of five African countries are about to make their way to Washington to meet Donald Trump. Now, this is as the meeting on Wednesday is being described as President Donald Trump's first major diplomatic outreach to Africa since returning to office, and that the invitation includes heads of state from Senegal, Liberia, Guinea-Bissau, Gabon, and Mauritania. Let's have a listen to this report.
Diplomatic outreach to Africa from Washington since Donald Trump returned to office. Five African leaders are heading to the United States to meet with U.S. President Donald Trump over the course of 3 days, from 9th to 11th of July. All from West African nations, they include Liberian President Joseph Nyuma Boakai, Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye Faye, President of Gabon Brice Clotaire Oligui Nguema, President Mohamed Ould Ghazouani of Mauritania, and President Umaro Sissoko Embalo of Guinea-Bissau. According to Washington, the meeting will center on commercial opportunities, although experts say that more topics could be on the agenda. The five countries have valuable natural resources, including oil, gas, gold, and rare earth minerals. But all of them also face considerable challenges, such as corruption, authoritarianism, and political instability. What agreements and results will come from their meeting with the American president remain to be seen.
Coming back from the international news segment right there, dear listeners, so this gets us into the economic indicators of heading into the last 5 minutes of today's program here on your number one talk radio station, that being On the Radar. Now, as we take a look at what your Namibian dollar can afford in terms of the international foreign exchange rates in comparison to the top three currencies, so that is for 1 euro, you can get 21 Namibian dollars 46 cents. For 1 British pound sterling, you can get 24 Namibian dollars and 88 cents. For $1, you can get 18 Namibian dollars and 32 cents. The Namibian dollar versus some of the other particular international currencies, which also include regional currencies. For one Namibian dollar versus the Angolan Kwanza, you can get 13 Kwanza and 27 cents. For one Namibian dollar versus the Australian dollar, that can be 8 cents, 0.08 cents in terms of the value there. For one Namibian dollar versus the Botswana pula, you can get 7.22 cents of the Botswana currency. For one Namibian dollar versus the Canadian dollar is about 0.07 cents. In terms of the Canadian dollar. For one Namibian dollar versus the Chinese yuan renminbi, that's about 0.38 cents in Chinese yuan renminbi. Focusing on just some of the other particular discussions that you can still see heading into the rest of your engagements with us, obviously. This has seen some of the developments popping up in terms of the recent visit of the Prime Minister of India, that being Narendra Modi. Just citing there for you, dear listeners, in terms of the ongoing visit, as well as also taking a particular look at some of the talking points that obviously stem from the engagements that have taken place. One of them obviously is based upon the Electoral Commission of Namibia's particular exercise in terms of the supplementary voter registration process that is scheduled, actually as they are building up towards. This will see that the discussion is about a credible voters registering in terms for participation later this year in the elections process for the regional and local authority elections, is where the emphasis has come through from the regional electoral officer of that in Rundu in Kavango East, specifically Mr. Paulus Sifire, who indicated that the registration process is free, that it should be fair and transparent, and actually build up or result in transparent elections being the total goal. Now, this is as the supplementary voter registration process will run from 4 to 19 August, which will form part of preparations for the upcoming national elections, and specifically as key milestones also set to follow. These include the publication of final voters registration between 24 and 25 October, with election day being scheduled for 26 November. Citing some of those particular developments, do remember, dear listeners, if you are not part of our e-paper, the Villager e-paper platform, do remember all that you can do is send us a text message which says subscribe. Remember to save the contact detail, the number, so it does not look like we are randomly spamming you with updates, as well as also informative talking points and reading material. And then just look forward to every Monday, every Wednesday, and every Friday's edition coming through in your various digital inboxes. And once again, just repeating some of the major headlines that come through from today's e-paper, that over 260,000 cyber threats are detected or were detected in 3 months. And that's ultimately what has impacted Namibia. The second one is also based upon the discussion of BRICS members that call for UN and its Security Council's reform. That's obviously from the recent engagement which the Indian Prime Minister, Mr. Modi, has arrived in from, because he flew directly from Brazil all the way here to Namibia. And as well as also some of the other particular insightful discussions which stem from the implementation by the European Union and the AI Act. That was a discussion that Helmut and I had here on the Home Run, that being in last week. And another specific insightful discussion coming through from one of the opinion pieces that is also contained within it, the aspect of unemployment that impacts GDP growth, strains economic stability, and disrupts the social web. Another one in terms of the sports updates that pop up from today's eVillager edition is the introduction of foot golf, which is aiming to become a new sport code. And in that scenario and in that line, dear listeners, it ultimately does bring us up to the end of today's program here on your number one talk radio station, and specifically that being Eagle FM. This has been the On the Radar for your Wednesday edition. On that note, let's see each other again, same time, same place, or alternatively later on today, specifically in the home run edition for this Wednesday.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral,
my friend,
political,
why do
or
you
traditional,
so worried?
And church events. And
Ace,
basically,
I'm
any
planning
event
an event
that you
for
wish
next
to broadcast
weekend,
on a national
I don't know
event,
how to best get
call them
to
now
hear about
and
it.
Talk to Monica at 581-270-3727. Or the office number
today.
083
Eagle FM has a dedicated
400 that can travel anywhere
FM
countrywide
the
to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have a capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha, we take it off a guna, imatina, omjo. Chicago Shafas and Anana, longishifa, ya, as you demo, she wana. Ia moyao, or tango got it some money. Anagashifa, ya Namibia, ombitom, banawa, or jika. Seithanina, omaguro, nidanitoma, yue, yongishifa, yo, kupitira, mo, Eagle FM Media House. Ngwe tuende time meha u kakombanga nena. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma kodara heta tuimu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of